We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
And with that said, how many of you know the old song, Ghost Riders in the Sky? Ghost Riders in the Sky, several of us. It's not a song that has been played a lot for most of the young people to know it. It's an old Western tune about a cowboy who, while he rests on his journeys, observes some ghostly cows running across the sky, and worse yet, ghostly riders who he comes to understand are condemned to chase them forever. This is their version of cowboy hell. They are chasing the devil's cattle across the skies, and they can never catch them. And the song got put into my head because a nephew of mine was kind of fiddling around with the tune on my mandolin at the family party that Michael and I went to. And the other morning, I was just kind of singing through it, seeing how many of the lyrics and the rhymes I could still come up with. And I had gotten down to the last verse, and as the riders passed him by, he heard one call his name. If you would save your soul from hell or riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. I was on that last verse, I was on that last line when Michael came down the stairs and around the corner into the kitchen. She heard me softly singing as I was getting my vitamins out and all that. And I got to that last line, you know, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. And Michael's head came up and she said, "What about devil's food and Frosties in the sky?" I said, "You haven't had your breakfast yet, have you? Because I'm pretty sure you didn't understand what I was saying," and then went back over it. Now, I tell you all that so I can tell you this. I'm pretty sure that we frequently misunderstand most of what John said, or excuse me, what God said to the Apostle John in the book of Revelation. And I selected this little bit from the very end of the book for today, and Bill read it for you about the throne of God, which if you read the previous chapter has come down with the new Jerusalem, and from it flows the river of the water of life, and on either side of the river of the water of life grows the tree of life, bearing fruit in every month, and its leaves are for the healing of the nation. Big question among Bible scholars is whether to take descriptions like that as a literal or a metaphorical description. And as you know, I am in my approach to the Bible something of a literalist. But I have often encountered those who want to read this and many other passages in a more metaphorical sense, and I went back and looked over some of the commentaries along that way, and it says, for instance, you're not talking about a real river. It's not a flowing river of the water of life. It's a metaphorical description of the glory of God going out to cover the whole earth. And that's what you're supposed to understand. Don't diminish it down to just a river. Understand the metaphor that it's the glory of God. And I've tried, and I just can't do it. Nor do I take the tree of life as a metaphor. I think we're talking about real trees with real leaves, and I hope so, because the nations don't need a metaphorical healing. They need a real healing. And mortality does not demand a metaphorical cure. It demands something more real and tangible. But I've been told many times by my more sophisticated Bible scholar brethren that my understanding of these things is childish and silly. And that may be, yet it is my understanding. But in terms of it being childish and silly to think of a real water of life, let me tell you this. In the real world, in the entirely non-metaphorical world that surrounds us, if you quit drinking water, you'll die. And it's not metaphorical at all. Water is necessary for us to live. Now let me ask you a question. How many of you ever resort to drinking bottled water because you don't trust the tap water where you may be? Yeah, several of us. How many of you would be comfortable drinking out the end of a garden hose in a neighborhood in Guatemala? Very, very few of us would try such a thing because we recognize that there is water and then there is water. And some of it is healthful and some of it is much less so because it is contaminated and impure. And I'm looking for something really pure, wholesome, and healthful, and literal in the river of the water of life that will flow from the throne of God. And then the tree of life. I've been told that to expect a real tree is also childish and simplistic. To think of a vegetable product that could so enhance and prolong our lives. But before you judge that silly, let me try one more thing. How many of you take vitamins? You see? You already believe this. Unless you just take vitamins because you enjoy spending money and choking down pills for no particular reason. You already believe that such products can enhance your health and prolong your life. How many of you also believe that God can make a better health product than our big pharma companies? Now I want to tell you, I have to do more housekeeping with this sermon than usual before I get down to what I really want to talk about. So keep bearing with me. You know that if you're taking it literally with me, in those early chapters in Genesis, there were two trees in the garden that were given special note, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Two trees. How many trees were Adam and Eve forbidden to eat from? One tree. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It says, from any other tree in the garden, any other, you may eat, just not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There's an implication there. They could eat from the tree of life. And I believe they were until sin changed. Access to the tree of life was forbidden. Now, all that said, one more thing, at least on housekeeping. We have a misunderstanding about this whole matter of our eternity. There is a popular cultural understanding that we will live forever in heaven, which is not the case. There will be a new heaven. And there will be a new earth. And if you read what it says there carefully, you will come to understand we will live on the new earth. We will have community with heaven, able to walk and talk with God as Adam and Eve were able to walk and talk with God, but we will live on the new earth. This makes perfect sense when you think about it. God designed for Adam and Eve and for all their descendants a perfect home. It was called Earth. And then we broke it. And what is going to happen one day is that everything that was lost to Adam and Eve will be restored to the redeemed. An unbroken earth. An unfallen earth. And as we get back to what I really, really want to talk about this morning. There are two phrases in this description of that time, in this 22nd chapter of Revelation, that I want to concentrate on. One is just these words: there will be no more curse. Now, I have a larger sermon that I have preached on this topic from time to time and place to place that I can't go into today. But let me just give you the briefest description of my outline for understanding the Bible. There are two chapters that serve as a parenthesis on the one side. They are the first two chapters of the book of Genesis, and they describe the time before the curse. And there are two chapters on the other end of the Bible that form the opposite parenthesis, and they are the last two chapters of the book of Revelation, and they describe the time after the curse. Two chapters about the time before the curse, two chapters about the time after the curse, and 1,185 chapters in the middle that describe the curse, its nature, its consequences, and what God is doing with it and about it. Because our life is lived in the middle section, under the shadow of the curse, that we can look at what once was, and we can look to what will be, when everything that was lost to Adam and Eve is restored to the redeemed. And I want you to understand, the curse was bad. The curse imposed, I always say, five big things. One is separation. Separation from our way of living that we were designed for. Separation from the God who is our life, because sin now stands between us. The bitterness of toil. In the earth as it was first designed, we were able to work, and work was always productive, and the creation cooperated with our efforts in those days before weeds and briars and thorns and parasites and destructive insects and you name it. The curse introduces excessive, harmful pain. I think probably before Genesis 3, if Adam or Eve had stuck their finger on a thorn, that might have hurt some, and they'd said, "Boy, I won't do that again." But excessive, harmful, soul-killing pain comes with the curse. Enmity comes with the curse. Enmity between us and Satan, the tempter who led us astray. Enmity between you and me and all other human beings. And enmity between us and God, our Maker. For friendship with the world is enmity toward God. And the curse brings death. As I have said, I read it literally. I believe that access to the tree of life was cut off, first by an angel that guarded the way, second by the destruction of the world that was in the flood of Noah. The curse was bad. The curse is bad. And we live under its shadow, subject to all of its conditions, heartbreak, ills. But the day is coming when the beginning of our new life will be summed up by these words: no more curse. It will all be gone. And everything that was lost will be restored. That describes the beginning of the life to come. But there is a second phrase in these three small verses that describes the substance of our life to come. And it is this: the saints of God will serve Him. Did you catch that part? It was thrown in there in the midst of all this important sounding stuff, like it too is important. This describes our life in eternity. The saints of God will serve Him. I'm going to tell you what I have come to understand as the testimony of my life, and I fully acknowledge that I have entered into what I like to divide things up. I have entered into the last third of my life. But this is more important to me now than it ever was. The joy of my life has been to serve God. Such glory and power as may ever be evident in my life and ministry are the result of a determination to serve God and nothing more. And the purpose of my being has come to be just this: to serve God in this world and in the world to come. My joy, my purpose, my power, my glory is to serve God. And I will serve Him. I want to put these two thoughts together as I work toward a conclusion. The curse again. I've come to understand that God did not inflict the curse just because He was mad. I mean, look at the setup I gave you. Look how much I love you. And then look at the way you treat me. Now you toss me overboard the first time somebody presents any alternative. All that is true. But God didn't issue the curse just because He was mad and thought we needed some slapping around. He didn't do it because it made Him feel better. The curse, our experience of it, has become a winnowing process, a sorting process, and it separates one kind of thing from another. How many of you are familiar with these words? Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. Anybody have heard those before? A few? It comes in the opening portion of Milton's Paradise Lost. Not the easiest book ever to read, but worth your time if you ever want to take a crack at it. Milton places these words in the mouth of Satan, whom he has to say, "Here," and by here he means in hell, "here we may reign secure, and in my choice, to reign is worth ambition, even if in hell." For better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. I think that Milton captured something important there. Why, as we understand it, will Satan not be saved? Well, not because the grace of God has run headlong against a limitation that it cannot deal with. Not because the love of God reaches some limit where, "No, you I cannot love." Satan will not be saved because he can't get over himself. Because he can't humble himself. because he will not subject what he regards as his wisdom to that of his Maker, because he will not serve. As he taught Adam and Eve, just for a second, give up serving God and serve yourself, because you could serve yourself so much better. So much better. If only you would. And we see how that worked out. And living in the midst of the curse, we get to evaluate all of our decisions in the light of its beginning. For we stand knee deep, hip deep, waist deep in the rubble of paradise, in the heartbreak and the frustration of the curse. And in that context, we get to look back at our first parents' decision and ask ourselves, what's it worth it? And I got to tell you, for me, the answer is no. And I will make a different decision. I will serve him. The curse has taught me this. It is not better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. It is not better to reign anywhere than to serve God. Period. Here's something I've learned. Every time I thought I was really in charge, I made a king-size mess of things. So much better to serve God. So much better to serve Him through distress than to serve myself in ease. So much better to serve Him in righteousness even when it's hard than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. In this world, in the world to come. Now, forever, in these circumstances, in any circumstances, better to serve God than to reign anything, anywhere. I get an amen on that? These words describe the life of the saints in eternity. We will serve Him. And I could not ask for more. Who will be excluded? Those who, like their fallen teacher, cannot get over themselves and in humility subject themselves to the will of God and serve. Oh, friends, let that not be any of us. And if there has arisen in your life this problem, that you would in any sense serve yourself rather than God, that you would choose to hold the reins, to be the captain of your destiny, rather than simply serve Him. If you need to let go of the one and grasp the other, so that in that day when there will be no more curse, you may be among the saints that will serve Him forever, then this is your moment.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton, all one word, IndianRunChristianChurch.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.